You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 4 July, U.S. markets are closed for Independence Day and the U.K. votes. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha. Bidvest looking to sell their bank. There are only like two second-tier banks left. I think it's them and Sasfin. And they're buying a cleaning business, Canada, U.S. and U.K. Philip Vorts from PSG Asset Management, the investment case for China. In addition, Naidu from Standard Bank. They've got two new structured products coming out, emerging markets and global growth. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Flight prices soar for Durban July. Airfares more than double those of an ordinary weekend. News 24, global giants are ditching SA's massive gas find amid frustration with government. In terms of the joint operating agreement, Total Energies must advise whether or not it will withdraw within 30 days. Morning markets, US was green. S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ 0.9% higher. The East is also green. Sydney 0.2% up, as is Tokyo. Hong Kong up 0.33% and Tencent 0.8% higher. Commodities mostly green. Gold 2,368. Brent is the red at 86.96. Platinum 1,019. Palladium 1,025. Rand is 18.41. Bitcoin 58,900. And top 40 opening call, a red open, but 40 points, which is less than 0.1% down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chenny and I with Jimmy Muyaha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time I mentioned in the intro there. So Bidvest exiting banking. They bought Rennie's Bank back in the late 90s, rebranded it, survived the second-tier banking crisis, and now saying thanks, but we want out. And at the same time, in a separate announcement, buying a cleaning business out of Canada operating in the UK and the USA. The bank, I suppose, cleaning up, and I suppose the cleaning business, new operation, and some hard currency earnings is the theory.
Yeah, morning, Simon. The Bidvest team making it very clear where their strategy sits. I mean, if you just look back to the financial services side of their business, they've exited from the life business in the past, or in recent times. They're now looking to get out of the banking side of it. They're also then looking to move their short-term insurance into the automobile division. So effectively removing Bidvest Financial and Bidvest Financial Services. And for them, it's, well, they've said that it's about recycling capital and being able to deploy that capital elsewhere. And clearly, following that announcement with the announcement of the Canada acquisition, they're recycling into cleaning services or into divisions that they know for them might be more profitable, might be less of a headache to maintain and manage. I mean, running a financial services division is quite a cumbersome exercise, and they themselves have said that that's something else, that's another factor that they looked at. It requires ongoing dedication to maintain that, but more so than that, a banking license in South Africa is not an easy thing. The compliance that comes with that is something that perhaps they've decided just doesn't make sense from a resource perspective. And when we look at the book, does it justify, based on the banking clients we have, does it justify having this entire division? Yes, one could argue they made net operating income north of 200 million from that bank. But at the same time, you had to then have facilities. I mean, I think they had to put down north of 8 billion rand for the clients that are there, the lease offerings that they have and all of that. So for them, it probably just doesn't make any more sense. And they've realized that they can redistribute and redeploy that capital better in line with their strategy.
Yeah, massively capital intensive in the banking space. And that strategy is, as I mentioned, I mean, it's buying a cleaning business. No numbers mentioned at all, although they're quite confident that in terms of debt and not an issue, that obviously they need some regulatory approval. But this is kind of, I suppose, Bidvest going back to their basics.
Absolutely. There's a time to diversify and diversify income streams and expand and look at that. But there's also a time to consolidate as a business. And it's a very difficult task. It's a very difficult balancing act for a management team to be able to know exactly when to make that sort of decision for the good of the business from a long-term perspective as well. So at the end of the day, if they keep the financial business and the financial business starts to not perform as they see it or as they hoped it would perform, then we are the same shareholders that will come back to the management team and say, but why haven't you disposed of this? Yeah. So it's never an easy thing to decide to consolidate business or to decide to commit wholeheartedly to a certain strategy. But credit to the Bidvest team, they've identified that the business, while still profitable, immensely profitable at this stage, might not align with us in the long term. And therefore, let's move it off while we still can make some money off of it, because then we can recover the investment that we put into it, or we can realize some of the investment that we haven't been able to realize over the years. That being said, I mean, they've obviously outlined that they want to see if they can get a buyer concluded by the end of the year, prior to regulatory approvals and all of that having to come into effect. And then from that perspective, I suppose you then have to identify who the most suitable buyer is and whether that makes sense for your business in terms of whatever price is being offered. As you said, they haven't given us any indication of what they're looking to get for that business. They also haven't given us an indication of what they've paid for any of their new businesses. All we can kind of see is what's put on the balance sheets and how they value things on the balance sheets. But from that perspective, I think we'll have to wait and see who's interested in the business. I, for one, can think of several entities and institutions that would be interested in a bank at this stage and a banking license. But we'll have to see how that shapes up.
Yeah, absolutely. In a bank that's already going, not a bank that you need to start as Discovery's done and as others as well. But I like your point. Restructuring from a position of strength is important. Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst, always appreciate the early morning time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Philip Forst, fund manager at PSG Asset Management. Philip, appreciate the time today. China, lots of fears around China, some of it undoubtedly justified. But certainly the one true story there is strong valuations. In a recent note you put out, you reminded us that the Hang Seng was down over 50% from 2021 to the beginning of this year. Bit of a recovery coming through. But if we compare it to other markets the world over, China remains very cheap on both the price earnings, but also a dividend yield.
Hi, Simon. Yeah, thanks for having me on your program. Yeah, you rightly said, I think most people would be aware that there's been a lot of issues coming out of China in the last couple of years. We've seen, I guess, GDP growth holding up reasonably well at about 5%, but the property markets, regulatory interventions across many industries, especially technology sectors, but also increasingly tense geopolitical environments and many other issues have contributed to that sell-off that you alluded to. Now, the Hang Seng Index, having lost over half of its value since 2021, currently trades at a P ratio, price earnings ratio of just under 10 times. Yep. Now that compares to, I think, the S&P currently at 28 times earnings or global averages at about 22 times. So while all these issues that I mentioned are real, what we kind of find is that good opportunities for investment often kind of start in an environment of fear and uncertainty. Yeah. And that kind of is what's leading us to discuss this today.
You mentioned property, because let's get that out of the way. I mean, property has been a big challenge for China over the last, I mean, I'm trying to remember when Evergrande and others first popped up. I think it was 2021. Are we seeing some signs of improvement coming through there?
Yeah, it's still early days. So as you say, property, it's an important sector of the economy, depending on different measures, about a quarter of GDP. So it's been a source of significant pain for quite a few years. What we're currently seeing, we're seeing some stabilization coming through in the sector with the government measures, but the government kind of needs to strike a fine balance of not supporting the sector too much and reigniting another bubble.
Yeah.
But obviously, it also needs to stabilize the sector and given its importance to the economy.
If we look at sort of geopolitics, politics, I suppose, we've seen a number of Western politicians anti-China. We've seen tariffs continuation under Biden. That certainly is it's a risk to China, but my sense is it's going to take a lot of time. The other part of the equation, of course, is that it's not as cut and dry as just throwing tariffs in. Of course, China comes back, and I'm thinking, you know, chips and the like, they then start producing internally, which actually strengthens the economy and strengthens the whole country.
Yeah, when we talk tariffs and geopolitics, it gets very complex. As you say, I mean, Western politicians have been, call it, anti-China for quite a while. But we think it's also got a lot of unintended consequences, which people could be underappreciating, given China's importance and scale in global supply chains, whether it's chips, et cetera. But we're talking of critical minerals that are needed for the kind of global and Western green transition or products required, like batteries, et cetera, where China just has so much supply. I think China produces four times more batteries than it's required for its domestic needs, which kind of leads China to export a lot of excess capacity to global markets, kind of in a way offsetting some of the tariff pressures that might come their way or have already come their way.
Yeah, I get your point on that. Another point you raised in the notes, a lot of folks will say, I can get China exposure via a Tesla or a Nike or something like that. And you certainly can. But you make the point that actually local brands are getting much stronger and in many cases competing or out-competing the foreign brands that they've been having for, well, in some cases, in the case of, for example, Nike, for decades.
Absolutely. So a colleague and I just spent a week in China at the end of May, where we spoke to quite a few local experts and obviously management teams. And what's interesting, a lot of the kind of messages coming through is that the Chinese consumer that previously would just basically go for a Nike or for a Mercedes-Benz is becoming increasingly like indifferent between local and foreign brands. And that isn't just an economic equation that Chinese local brands are offering good value, but they're actually, over many decades of work and in many cases copying and out-competing Westerners, are offering really superior products. And we've seen that across, as you mentioned, Nike. As an example, we've got a recent holding in our global equity fund at PSG called Antisports, which is China's largest homegrown sportswear company. And actually that company increased its market share in the last kind of 10 years to 19% from under 8% back then. Nike is still a dominant company there, but it's just, we're just seeing locals just increasing their share of wallet. And that's seen across quite a few industries.
Yeah, I mean, the big one, I think, which many of my listeners will know, which of course is BYD, which is the electric vehicles. We still tend to think Tesla when we think electric vehicles. And sure, I mean, they are the dominant player in the space. But we're seeing a lot of other companies come into it and a bunch of Chinese companies. And I'm thinking, well, the Chinese cars that, you know, drive around the roads of South Africa these days. 10 years ago, there was nothing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're going to see more of that going forward. So South African motorists will probably all know the Havals and Cherries in the local market, and be aware of BYD, I think the Atto 3 model kind of getting launched late last year. And what's a bit ironic actually is that BYD actually replaced Volkswagen as one of the title sponsors at the European Championships held actually in Germany. And that's just a sign of things to come kind of going forward. A bit anecdotal, but it's backed up by a kind of evidence on market shares. When we were driving around Shanghai and Shenzhen, you can really see the scale of different Chinese car brands driving around, EVs and hybrids, et cetera. I think EVs, hybrids, there were almost half the markets of new car sales back in May. And it's just tremendous to be seeing different brands. I think they're going to be heading to Western and global shores. And that's backed up by export data. China was kind of nowhere from an export perspective 4 years ago. I think they were producing 700,000 or exporting 700,000 vehicles in 2020, and that's risen to over 4 million cars now. Actually, that displaced Japan and Germany as the largest exporter of cars, which is quite significant. And that's part as a result of obviously strategic initiatives of getting into car production, EVs, kind of 15 years ago. But importantly, given the slack in the Chinese economy, there's excess capacity that's being exported to global markets, which has implications for companies in those markets and jobs, et cetera. And that's once again leading to some of the tariff issues that we discussed earlier.
Yeah, and I take the point of the excess capacity, which you mentioned a moment ago as well. We'll leave it there. Philip Ward, Fund Manager, PSG Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you bullish China? Philip makes a great point there, that where he says, you know what, you've almost got to be bullish when it's scary to be so. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, Your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Adhishan Naidu, Retail Investments at Global Markets Standard Bank. Adhishan, great to have you on the show again. You've got two, well, Standard Bank's got two new structured products listing next week, a global growth and emerging market. Give us some of the details of the inner workings of these.
Perfect. Good morning, Simon, and thank you so much for the time today. We do have two new structures launching. And for the listeners out there, before I dive into these structures, just to give some context of what a structured product actually is, it's a prepackaged fixed-term investment that offers investors an easy access to local offshore equity markets, but with the added benefit of some level of capital protection, as well as a predefined risk and return profile. Now, that being said, Sai, we have, as you said, the Global Growth USD Auto Call, which references a basket of shares from the S&P 500, as well as the Euro Stoxx 50 indices, all right? And it's a five-year termed contract or structured product. And the Emerging Markets DG Plus is a 3.5-year term, which references the MSCI EM ex-China Africa NTR 4% decrement USD index. Now, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
I apologize. But both these structures, I just want to mention, Sai, are actually perfect because they offer the investor the opportunity to gain USD exposure without needing to use their single discretionary allowance or convert an ISAR.
I take your point in that, and that is perhaps an important feature, is that we're doing it in rands, we're getting US dollar exposure. It'll expire in rands as well. You mentioned some downside protection there. Is this sort of a capital guarantee if I hold to duration?
So both are capital guaranteed, I just want to touch on, but the EM Plus, or the EM DG, as we call it, right, is a full protected capital, fully protected capital investment. And let me explain here. So both, whilst the EM DG does convert your dollars for you, okay, the fact that it is a 3.5-year termed product, okay, it is fully protected in South African rand. Okay, so at maturity, should the, for example, index be negative, okay, your funds are simply then converted back into ZAR and obviously put back into your account as a client. Okay, you would lose the USD exposure. The Global Growth Auto Call, because it's a five-year called event, callable after year three, there is some downside, obviously, capital. So, for example, should the index be down at the end of year five, okay, and the index be down, though, that it's referencing negative 30%, you are exposed to the USD exposure.
Okay, gotcha. So the T's and C's there. You've mentioned durations. What sort of minimum amounts? I mean, sometimes these structured products sound great, but it's like, you know, if you haven't got 100,000, please don't phone us. What are your minimums on these?
So that's exactly the point. So we've been looking at this, and I mean, the team's worked really hard on kind of getting great products out into market. And the fact that we're actually manufacturing now, with the opportunity to obviously link with a lot of other brokers and, I mean, reputable brokers out there, we decided that, listen, the retail base actually could use a structured note where we've dropped the minimums now to 25,000. So both structures are 25,000 with increments of 1,000 thereafter. And all costs are factored into them.
Yeah, costs, and the key feature of those is that the cost is built in. Listing is next Thursday, which is the 11th of July. How does, if someone's interested, how can they find out more? How can they buy them?
So the current structures, both these structures, as you said, list on the 11th, which means they're closing. So investable time, so it's till the 11th. The strike date is the 18th of July.
Okay.
You can, any one of the listeners out there can actually contact Online Share Trading or any, as I said, the reputable investment brokers. We have channeled through our Standard Bank financial consultant, so SBFC, and our stockbroking. We are listing with a few external brokers as well. Should your broker not have them available to you and you're interested, as I said, contact OST and obviously have them contact OST and we can put some SLAs in place.
Perfect. We leave it there, Adhishan. I do Retail Investments at Global Markets Standard Bank. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Rob Van Aden yesterday, CEO of Scope Markets, talking about traders shifting from FX to indices, which I find fascinating because I certainly think, I've always said, you know, trading FX, you're a man, careful of your fingers. I much prefer, and I do, trade indices. We asked what you trade. Two-thirds said equities, nice and simple. A fifth were trading indices, about a tenth, 10% trading FX, a small number, a couple of percentage points were trading commodities. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome comment in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Concentration in U.S. markets.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.